Well, yes. Hi. Nice to meet you. And we're doing a rare video call in. Dun, dun, dun. Because you have more than enough hair for the both of us. Most impressive. And I'm just going to zoom in on the books in the back there, make sure that they're approved of as a whole. And I am eager and keen to have the conversation. So take me where you think I should go from a salvation standpoint.
Yeah, I'll start by reading the part of the email that is relevant to this. I'd like to discuss your reasons for falling away from Christianity, as I believe was first discussed in 63:31, falling away from God. You have also spoken on it numerous times since that day. A good number of people have called in with hopes of swaying your viewpoint, and none of them have managed to convince you to change your stance on leading Christianity. I found myself thinking about your argument concerning the fact that the Bible promotes the protection of children, or the least amongst us, which includes children, and that no Christian did anything to help you, so you believe you could no longer be a Christian anymore. Hopefully that sums up your argument, at least for the moment. I didn't want to add too much more to that particular wall of text.
I mean, there's the philosophical arguments and so on. And it's not just that people didn't do anything to protect me as a child, but the Christian society, when I talked in biblical terms about we should put virtue above family, right? That if you're part of a crime family, you should consider leaving that crime family if you want to be virtuous. And if your parents are criminals or relentlessly abusive or something like that, which I'm no biblical scholar, but my understanding was Jesus said, you know, I've come to set child against father and you should follow the new path. And you should, you know, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. If people are relentless evildoers, you should shun them and so on. And I also followed the biblical injunction because, of course, in telling people who are suffering relentless abuse as adults from their parents, I've never said, you know, just ditch them, you know, ghost them. I've always said, you know, sit down, have a conversation with them, engage with the therapist, which to me follows the biblical injunction. If someone wrongs you, you should sit down and try and work it out with them and so on. So I took the indifference and sometimes hostility to the protection of children that I experienced in three different continents, right? Ireland, in England, in Africa, and in Canada. So it's not a scattered, and these are all Christian nations. I mean, less so now, but certainly when I was growing up, you know, 55, that's a long time ago, man. So yeah, like when I was growing up over half a century ago, they were very Christian nations. And my father, of course, was a Christian later in life and did not want to hear anything about what happened to me as a child. And then when I began following biblical injunctions regarding shunning evildoers who are unrepentant, right, while giving them a chance to redeem and have conversations, the Christian nations, and this would be almost 20 years ago, the Christian nations of America and Canada and England and Ireland, they're all published articles calling me a bad, evil, you know, cult leader who's destroying families for fun and profit. So it wasn't just that they were indifferent to or callous regarding the suffering that I experienced as a child, family members who were super religious, like my aunts went to church many times a week, didn't do anything. And then when I sort of fought my way free and began applying the kind of instructions that I'd received as a Christian child, people thought it was horrifying and appalling. And this is after 2,000 years of Christianity. People still find that which Jesus commands to be abhorrent and evil. So I think that it would be time for a new way of approaching virtue.
Yeah, definitely understand that the notion of after 2,000 years Christianity should have gotten its act together. Definitely, that's definitely something that would probably be used as a counter point for the philosophical argument I plan to make. I was actually going through that the video before and noted that. So for intellectual honesty's sake, that's probably something that could very well be used against what I'm going to say.
And I just want to make a tiny suggestion to look at the camera. I know it's kind of weird because you want to look at me, but if you look at the camera, I'll look at the camera and then the audience will get the eye contact with us. But sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah.
And I really, I do appreciate the call. Like, I do appreciate that you take things seriously, that the salvation of soul and the pursuit of virtue is important to you. And I really just want to say how much I appreciate you setting up the call and having the conversation. I mean, it means that you care about me, about virtue, about communicating good and evil. So I really do appreciate that. But so sorry, go ahead.
Yes. Since April, I think I started thinking about the counter argument. I just couldn't quite shake it. And you might very well wipe the floor with me with what I'm about to say. You are the most prolific philosopher on the earth. So that's definitely a point in your court already. Hopefully, it's not a complete waste of time for either of us. To clarify, for the argument, I won't be making any arguments pertaining to Christian theology, arguments for the validity of Christianity, nor the existence of God. Those are separate conversations, and there are also far more qualified people than I to have discussions like that with. Vox Day is a good person to probably start with. He claims to have mathematically disproved the theory of evolution to start with, but there's also others. Before I continue on, for what it's worth, I won't be making arguments pertaining to Christianity, arguments about Christian theology or the existence of God. Yep. Just for context, I've been listening to you since 2015. We previously met when you came to Australia. I won't say what city it is because you don't.
Oh, I know.
That's part of it. Yeah. It was one of the dinners that we met at when you and Lauren came, you brought Izzy along. I had a short conversation with her about lizards. That was very charming. And I also have a couple of photos that we took at the time. I could share them with you later if you'd like. Just a couple, yeah. Just to get the philosophical jitters out of the way, I've got two jokes for you to start with. I know, long preamble. First joke, the public education system. The second joke, democracy.
Got it. The punchline is debt.
Yep. Yes. All right. I took a number of notes. Feel free to chime in whenever things are not right, or you have anything you want to add. Everything I've gotten here is just from 6331. I'll begin at the pretty much top of my notes. In Matthew 25:40. It is written, the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for me, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. According to this verse, if his mother was abusing Stefan, she was also abusing God. And those who did nothing about it also harmed God, so they would not be following in the teachings of Christianity. Would you agree with what I'm saying so far?
Yes, for sure.
Yep. Proverbs 13:24 states, those who spare the rod of discipline hate their children. Those who love their children care enough to discipline them. I just Googled this. Two paragraphs from Google AI summed back to me that the rod is a metaphor for guidance. In ancient times, the rod was referred to a shepherd's staff. Shepherds use their staffs to gently guide, protect and steer sheep back onto the safe path and not to beat them. The rod represents authority, clear direction and boundary setting. Okay. And the true meaning of discipline, this is again just from Google AI. The proverb emphasizes that failing to teach, correct or hold children accountable will allow them to grow up without direction or self-discipline. It is an endorsement of active parenting and not violence. Okay. So I agree with you on this, Steph, that the rod is not about hitting kids. However, unfortunately for what it is, there are a lot of people out there that don't interpret it that way, that do interpret it as hitting children, which is very tragic. You also mentioned the parable of the Good Samaritan at 30 minutes. In Luke 25:37, it could be boiled down to give aid to those who are even your enemies. When those enemies are in need, or anyone is in need, really, those Christians were not your neighbor in that example, because the man in question was asking Jesus about who was my neighbor and all that was in that parable. At 39 minutes 30, you stated you were faced with a great mystery, one you admitted was not philosophical. Looking up at a cathedral, you'll wonder why Christians would spend so much time and labor on a great cathedral out of a love for God, and Jesus commands you to help the wounded, but they wouldn't make an anonymous phone call to help a child being beaten, dangerously beaten. At 48 minutes, Stefan stated that people would work a crazy amount of hours for only a small amount of money, but wouldn't make a single anonymous tip to save a child from being beaten within earshot, even though it is required to do so in order to receive eternal life. Supporting scripture for this can be found in Matthew 7:21-23. And I'm reading the passage here. Not everyone who calls out to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. Only those who actually do the will of my Father in heaven will enter. On judgment day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, we prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and performed many miracles in your name. But I will reply, I never knew you. Get away from me, you who break God's laws. Now, the finer points of this can be argued back and forth by theologians, you know, over and over and over again. And that's outside of the scope of this particular discussion. Again, just stating a couple of things that you've stated. And feel free to chime in anytime as well, Steph.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the rod is supposed to be the shepherd's staff and so on. There are things that are a bit dicey in the Bible, because it says in Proverbs 23:13-14, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish them with the rod, they will not die. Punish them with the rod and save them from death or Sheol. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. Discipline your children, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to their death. So do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish them with the rod, they will not die. And that indicates physical punishment, right? That is not just guidance, right? Because nobody says if you get a lecture, your kid won't die. But it means that corporal punishment is preferable to the death of the child, as far as I sort of would understand it. So I think that's kind of important as far as that goes. And the other thing too, of course, is that God is all-knowing and God inspired the Bible. And so God, we assume, inspires the translation. Like, it would be pretty tough to be bound to like the New James Version or the New International Version. It would be kind of tough to be bound by that if it was human interpretation that distanced the word of God from the ears of mankind. So we assume that God's all-knowing. He knows, God knows how people are going to interpret the word rod, right? Whoever spares the rod hates their children. Discipline, don't. If you punish them with the rod, they will not die. God knew ahead of time how people were going to interpret the word rod. And he could have said, do not withhold wisdom from a child. Whoever spares wisdom hates their children. Careful to give them wisdom. But he says the rod of discipline, knowing that human beings are prone to violence, knowing that human beings are prone to taking things literally. And so I still charge God with the word rod being interpreted as a physical, a stick or some sort of implement to hit children with, because God could have used the word wisdom or teaching or morality or faith. But no, he used the word rod and talked about punish them with the rod. They're not going to die from it, right? Which indicates physical beatings. So we can say, well, Christians have misinterpreted the word rod but God knew that they would, so he should have used a different word.
Yeah, and I can't argue on God's behalf on that. I definitely admit this is probably going to be one of the points that may indeed poke some holes in my my counter argument, which I haven't quite gotten to yet. Mm-hmm. Again,
I mean, if I claim to be the best translator in the world, I can translate Japanese to English with perfect fidelity, and I translate a book of instruction on children, how to be a parent. I translate a parenting book, and everyone who reads my parenting book that I translated from Japanese, and in the Japanese it says loving wisdom, and I translate it to hit with a stick, and people then say, well, the book, the loving wisdom in the book actually means hit with a stick, beat them, not excessively, right? Because, of course, the Bible does say that you shouldn't go too far. Like, fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. So, you know, some, right? So if I'm the best translator in the world, and I translate loving wisdom, and everyone gets, in English, hit the children with sticks, am I a good translator? I don't think so. And God is all-knowing, all-good, and knows exactly how the words are going to be interpreted. So saying that, well, people are misinterpreting it, it's like, if I'm a translator and everyone, or at least a lot of the population, gets my translation to be the opposite of what I say, I then can't also say that I'm a good translator. But God can't be bad at anything, because he's all-knowing and all-good and all-powerful. So it's just a paradox, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that when I was watching the video back, and I'll be frank, I don't have a counter argument to that particular claim, for all that's worth. I'm being as intellectually honest as I can about this. There may be other people who can have that conversation. I just don't have a particular counter argument.
And of course, some people say, and I appreciate that, some people say it's culturally contextual for ancient times, but I don't think that gives a good answer. You know, there's some biblical verses that people can interpret to be, you know, treat your slaves well as opposed to slavery is evil. They say, well, yes, but slavery was more accepted back then, but that's not really an option. Like, if somebody were to put out a manual in the West of how to treat your slaves well, that would be pretty bad. And God, of course, has infinitely more knowledge than we have in the modern world about just about anything. And so God doesn't get the excuse of, well, it was, you know, misinterpreted at the time, or there was a mistranslation or things like that, because that's not reasonable. Like, if I translate Japanese laws, right, and I give them out, I give a booklet of Japanese laws out, and I'm endorsed by the Japanese government and so on. And in the Japanese laws, it says, you know, urinate on homeless people, steal like crazy, and punch a cheerleader. And then people go and do that kind of stuff. That's sort of my fault, isn't it, for giving them bad instructions. So to give you good instructions, if the majority of Christians hit their children and view it as endorsed by the Bible, that's on God for providing that information. It is not up to people to try and figure out what seems non-obvious if God has provided a translation that can be very, very easily misinterpreted. I think that's on God. But you see, here's the thing too, and we can certainly talk about the corporal punishment thing. That's not my foundational issue. So we can bypass the corporal punishment. If I had simply been spanked from time to time, I would not have this particular issue. I would say, you know, well, I can kind of get it. The problem is that, you know, the level of abuse and violence was so extreme and so obvious to hundreds and hundreds of people over the course of my childhood that even if we were to say, well, it says spare the rod, spoil the child, it certainly does say, and I will agree with you completely there in the Bible, it says, yeah, but not too much. Like, and it was clearly too much. Like, I mean, it was clearly too much to the point where I was running away at the age of 4 or so. And so everyone can hear that it was too much. So even if we say which I'm fine to, you know, we don't have to spend too much time on the corporal punishment thing, unless you want to, of course, it's fine. But even if we say the corporal punishment thing is acceptable, we still do have the challenge that all the Christians around me heard and knew about the degree of violence in my household, which clearly would be excessive, even by biblical standards. And so my issue wasn't, well, I got spanked once a month, you know, lightly, and I had it explained to me, and therefore, you know, Christians are not following their virtues. I would say, well, I disagree with those virtues, but at least Christians were following them. But it was the level of violence and the excess nature of the violence that not only did they not intervene, but also I was punished for it. Like, I couldn't do any homework. It was so violent at home. There was so much chaos and so on that I got, you know, threatened with being held back a year. I got punished. I got detentions, which was tough because I had to work a job since I was 10 years old to help pay for the bills. So not only was it excess relative to the Bible, but I also received no sympathy for that excess and also was punished for things vastly beyond my control. And again, this is in a wide variety of schools. If it was just one school, like you could say, well, it was a bad school or whatever it is, but I went to public school, private schools. I went to school briefly in Scotland. I went to daycare in Ireland and England. I went to different schools in England. I went to a variety of different schools in Canada and then a variety of different universities. Now, we can say by the university age, that's sort of a different matter. People aren't quite as responsible. I'm not under the control of my mother in the same way. But then, of course, when I went public, I received more abuse and attacks and slander and so on. So I agree with you that we can look at corporal punishment as potentially justified or not justified, but the excess level of it was something that Christians themselves would recognize. And it was in the Bible to say, this is wrong and bad, and still nothing.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely was a huge travesty, a miscarriage of justice, turning a blind eye to the suffering that you experienced.
Punishing me for the effects, right?
Yep. Yes. Yes. Being punished again for having been beaten and being abused for not really doing anything wrong in the first place. So I could probably keep going down the list,
please do.
At 1:03:30, when you were a teenager, you had a house party and had the cops calling you 3 separate times. Yep. Despite you being very respectful to the surrounding homes, the notion that the Christians would call the police on a teenager's house party.
In an apartment building. So okay. Yeah, I just wanted to mention it wasn't so loud that the neighbors I grew up very poor, so we were in an apartment building, and the cops came 3 times and said, "I don't know why people keep calling me. It's really not that loud." But sorry, go ahead.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that. So that you weren't breaking any laws. It wasn't too loud. Like, you weren't smashing windows or anything. You weren't urinating in the hallways of the apartment building or anything like that. The notion that they would call the cops on you, but wouldn't do anything about you being abused when you were a child, even though that's something that we should do as Christians. We being like people like myself, obviously I'm a Christian, and people who would otherwise identify themselves as Christians, although identifying as Christians is a bit of a misnomer, perhaps. So ultimately, this is why you said here anyway, is why you gave up on Christianity. Perhaps it was like the thing that eventually made you realize, oh, this isn't working. I need to try something else. Is that correct?
I mean, there were intellectual reasons, philosophical reasons, but I think one of the reasons why I was open to those philosophical reasons is, if something has had over, well, it wasn't quite 2,000 years, of course, when I was a kid. Let's say I was born in 1966. So if an ethos has had 2,000 years to work to protect children. And of course, I've done, you know, the Bomb in the Brain series, and I've done all of the, here's what we need to do to protect children to have a better life in a better world. And there's really no other way to do it. And so if an ethos has had almost 2,000 years in which to protect children, and it doesn't protect children, and it calls the authorities only when the child is having fun, not when the child is being abused, and then the Christian society attacks someone who aims to protect at least adult children from ongoing abuse or give them the option to not be in the relationship. And of course, I was always taught, thou shalt not bear false witness. The society attacks me for talking about IQ. The society attacks me for talking about the voluntary family. The society attacks me for talking about child abuse. The society attacks me for reminding people that they should tell their parents the truth. If your parents, I've always said, like, if your parents did things that hurt you, you should be honest about that and you should tell them and try and work it out, which seems to me to fall entirely, honor their mother and their father. When you lie to your parents, you're not honoring them. Honoring people is telling the truth. Thou shalt not bear false witness, and holding people morally accountable. Because if God says treat your children gently, then child abusers are going to go to hell unless they repent. And so when I tell, even within the Christian context, when I tell children, you should, adult children, you should go and talk to your parents if they abused you or were violent or destructive, assuming it's physically safe, you should do that so that they have the chance to repent. Because if you hide sins from people, you also remove from them the feedback they need in order to repent. So it seems to me that even though I'm an atheist, according to Christian values, I was doing the Lord's work. And I got shamed, attacked, abused, humiliated, and so on, and then eventually deplatformed, although I think that was more for politics than that stuff. So, and churches did not say, oh, no, he's correct. You know, churches did not, I did not get conversations with priests. They did not invite me to come and talk to their congregation. They did not give me aid and succor while I was under ferocious attack by just about all the powers. I mean, I was on the front page of the New York Times 3 times, you know, so there was quite a lot that was going on. And I was on the front page of the New York Times because I was considered to be a bad guy for intervening with a guy who was actually in a pretty dangerous cult, and he ended up quitting. And there's another guy who got a job and a girlfriend and so on, and got out of a negative situation. And Christians did not at all intervene or give me sort of aid or comfort or any kind of support. I was very much left on my own telling people, thou shalt not bear false witness, honor thy mother and the father with the truth, and save people from their sins, and child abuse is wrong. This is all in accordance with how I understood the Bible to be, and Christians didn't want to have any part of it. And this was a worldwide phenomenon. Like, I was written about negatively on most continents. And so people can't claim to not know about these things. I mean, millions and millions of Christians read these allegations, and it wasn't even pointed out in the newspapers that I was an atheist or anything like that. And so, you know, when you're under fire, you notice who your friends and enemies are, and then you notice those who are indifferent. And so it was a sort of multi-dimensional social experiment in a way to see if Christians believed what they say they believe, and if you bear false witness and if you betray people who are doing good, I mean, by Christian standards, I was doing good. And if you are told you'll go to hell if you betray virtuous men and women, and you'll go to heaven if you support them, and still that's not enough. It's not enough. If you hear children being abused, all you have to do is make one anonymous phone call to the authorities and you've done the right thing. It doesn't put you in any danger. It doesn't put you in any risk whatsoever. And even the threat of hell and the promise of heaven isn't enough for people to take a 20-second phone call saying, I live at this address, some kid's being abused, and it's brutal, and you come check on them. No, it's only when I'm having a party. Then they want to call the authorities and get me dealt with. And so if that is the state of Christianity 2,000 years after its founding, maybe this is sort of the business side of me or the more practical side of me. It's like, if someone's had 2,000 years to get something right and they're still getting egregiously wrong, I think a different approach is needed, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It may sound cynical. I don't believe, like, as speaking as a Christian, this may sound bad, but it's not really the goal of Christianity to fix society and its because we're all living within the within the world, and the we believe in principalities of evil, and different basically not everyone is going to necessarily agree with us, and it's always going to be an uphill battle, is more or less what we believe as Christians, and we don't I think at the end of the day we try to do our I think we try to do our best, although many Christians admittedly did not do their best, but I think many of those people were not truly Christians. I think they may have worn the badge of Christianity more than truly believing. But you're probably going to talk about your aunts next, I imagine, maybe.
No, that's fine. I mean, but if after 2,000 years people can't do the right thing, I think we need a different approach to virtue. If the threat of hell and the reward of heaven is not enough to move people to do the right thing, we need another approach. If something hasn't worked for 2,000 years, and of course, you know the way that Australia is going and Europe is going and North America is going and so on, and what is Christianity but an effort to protect, when it's in the West, an effort to protect the West, it's also failing on that. You see what the Pope is saying about various things. It's absolutely appalling. And so I like the ideals, like a lot of the ideals in Christianity, but Christians don't Christian much, right? And so, okay, so maybe it's an impossible standard. Maybe people don't really believe it. Maybe in the hurly-burly of daily life, the abstractions of heaven and hell and angels and demons and so on kind of fall away, and we just need a different approach. And I can sort of go into why I think that, other than the sort of empirical stuff. But no, I don't condemn my aunts. I don't condemn my father, who became a staunch Christian later on in his life, but still didn't want to hear about any of my childhood experiences, and died without contacting me to even say that he was unwell and so on, because I guess what I had to say to him was unpleasant to him. And so he took a bit of a hedonistic, or in my view, sort of cowardly way out. But to me, it's like, if everybody's failing a belief system, I don't blame the individuals for failing the belief system. It's sort of like, I know that Christianity and communism are kind of natural enemies, so I don't mean to insult Christianity in this way. But it's kind of like if communism says, well, all you have to do is be a human being who doesn't respond to incentives and doesn't care about profit and is willing to work twice as hard for less money. Like, all you have to be is the opposite of a human being and things will be fine. I mean, people don't really believe that deep down, and they can't achieve it. So I don't condemn people for failing the ideals of communism because they're impossible to fulfill. And I don't fault people, since there were no Christians who did the right thing. I'm pushing 60 and it's never really happened. Like, honestly, I'm pushing, and I'm not putting you in this category because I appreciate having this conversation, but I'm pushing 60 and I have yet to have Christians say, you know what, you're really reminding us of the virtues and values. You're obviously not religious, but you're doing quite a bit that is positive, helpful, and courageous in the world. And you are reminding us of the virtues and values that we let drift from us. And, you know, we would like to support you in what it is that you're doing and so on, right? And I mean, my book, Peaceful Parenting, Christians could be talking about it in their sermons and so on and saying, look, this is a way to bring productive, healthy wisdom to children so that you don't have to use violence against them. And surely nonviolence is better than violence when it comes to parenting. And I've got the proof, I've got the science, I've got the facts, I've got the reason, I've got the evidence, I've got myself as a parent and my daughter who you met. And so I don't really blame my aunts or my father or other Christians that I've known. I just note that it doesn't work. In the same way, I don't blame people for the economics of communism or socialism not working. Like it can't. It can't work. And so it is not any sense of hostility. In fact, I feel quite a bit of sympathy towards people who have belief systems that they simply cannot manifest. And I've always tried to give people practical philosophical approaches that they can manifest. So it's not hostility and it's not any kind of contempt or negativity. It's just like, can we just admit that this doesn't work? And can we not look at a different approach?
Yeah. As to your point on it not working, clearly something has failed. As far as the work that you've done, you've estimated what approximately a billion assaults have not happened on children.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Definitely. I don't agree. Sorry, I don't disagree on the logic concerning universally preferable behavior. Whenever I've heard you speaking about it, I couldn't find any flaws in it. It's entirely within the realm of possibility that it's God's logic. Maybe I'm not making a categorical statement on that. It's just that I think that the big problem, and I'm going to get into my philosophical counterpoint now, which may very well just be or already have been disproven by what you've said, but I'll state it anyway. What would you say that the main point of failure was? Sorry, let me put this in a way. God's commandments were laid out, and some of them were up to a bit of interpretation, definitely. And you could put that down to differences of language, or perhaps the right word was not used, or a word that we interpret differently is not doing what it should have been doing back then. I think that the inherent flaw was ultimately the people, because everything else was shored up by other doctrine within the faith. And I think you could apply this to any other discipline. Take any discipline you like. I've got a list of things here if you'd like, but think of any other discipline, intellectual or practical, that you like, and we'll talk there. Anything aside from religion or philosophy for the moment. Sorry, I can't hear you.
Sorry, do you mean something like science?
Sure.
I mean, science has failures. Science as a discipline has failures, but it also has disproofs. And the people who fail consistently at science do end up usually bombing out of science, unless the government is taking them, creating a sort of protected enclave, and like this stuff that happens with physics, superstring theory never goes anywhere. The mRNA mystery DNA goop, that was all government stuff. So yeah, people fail for sure. I mean, in the free market, most businesses fail. And if you go out and ask a girl, most times she doesn't end up being your wife for life, right? So yeah, definitely things fail, people fail, and that's natural. But where's the correcting mechanism, right? Where's the corrective mechanism? So if you have a government institution, then that government institution can't ever really fail unless the whole economy collapses, which of course eventually it does. Because people are forced to pay for government schools. They're often forced to attend government schools. You can't fire teachers. They don't care about what the kids want because it's there for the teachers, not for the kids, and so on. And so where is the point of failure where things change? And Yeah, of course, people fail and institutions fail and human beings fail. We all have our biases and confirmation biases and so on, for sure. But if you look at the progress of the free market just over 150 years or 200 years, you know, you've seen the graph and the flat line of a dollar a day for people, and then, you know, industrial revolution, agricultural industry, it goes through the roof. If you look at the progress in technology, you know, we went from a half century plus just flying at Kitty Hawk for a couple of hundred feet to flying to the moon and back and so on. The technology that allows us to have these conversations, so we literally could drill through the center of the world and, you know, we'd probably pop up at each other's basement. And so all of that technology has had remarkable progress. Science has had remarkable progress. Medicine has had enormous progress. Up until the late 19th century, you were better off not seeing a doctor because you'd probably, he'd do something that would have you not survive. So if you sort of look at progress as a whole, there has been in many disciplines remarkable progress in more fact, reason, and evidence-based disciplines. Religion is not a fact, reason, and evidence-based discipline, and that's sort of one aspect. The other aspect, and I was just thinking about this today, and this is like fresh off the press, so it may be complete nonsense, but I'm sure you've seen that heat map, you know, like in-group preferences versus out-group preferences. You know, the people on the left, they care much more about strangers than they do about their own friends, family, society, community, or country. And I think some of that comes from religion. I know that a lot of people on the left aren't particularly religious, but I think a lot of that comes from religion. And I was sort of thinking of an analogy, knowing that analogies are not proof, but they're quite illustrative. When I think about somebody who works as an EMT, like works in an ambulance, right? And he's got like three, a driver and some other guy in the ambulance, the three in the ambulance. When they go to a big car crash, a bunch of cars have crashed, you know, they leap out of the ambulance and they go and take care of the strangers. They don't take care of the people in the ambulance because the people in the ambulance are kind of already fine, right? Assuming that they're not injured themselves, which they wouldn't be. And so I think for Christianity, they say, or Christians will say, well, our community, if we have a Christian country, our community is fine because it's already Christian. But what we want to do is we want to go to the third world or to Africa. We want to go to other places and we want to convert people because they're the ones who are going to hell, or at least not getting into heaven because they haven't received the good news of Jesus and so on. And so one of the things that's quite confusing about Christian societies is the degree to which they are out-group focused. And the heat map is like, we really care about the out-group. We don't care as much about the in-group. Now, again, I know conservatives are more in-group, but leftists are more out-group. But leftism, certainly Christianity was the father of leftism because it emerged out of Christian culture. And so I think another problem is that Christians like EMTs focus on the wounded, not on the healthy. And that means that they have a real focus on converting non-Christians more so than protecting Christians, if that makes sense. And I think that that goes a long way towards explaining some of the stuff that's going on in the West at the moment.
In my experience, I think, at least in my church, and maybe my church is kind of unique in this, is that we have a very good, we have a pretty big emphasis on building up or maintaining the people who are currently in and growing them in their faith. So I think that there are probably many.
I think I know you're not Catholic, or I don't think you're Catholic. Sorry to interrupt. Why do you think the Pope is pro-migrant, pro-Muslim, and so on? I mean, that seems quite, I mean, he is the giant lever that moves millions, hundreds of billions of Christians. And what's your theory as to why he is that way?
It could be that he's ideologically captured. It could be that he is not actually a Christian at all. And that's a hell of a claim to make, to be clear. If we look back throughout history, a lot of the popes who got into power, they were, you know, having affairs, they were plotting, you know, political assassinations, they were trying people for ridiculous offenses. A lot of dirty politicking going on there. You know, when somebody gets in and is able to be ideologically captured or ideologically capture the organization, it still doesn't undermine the foundational principles of the religion itself. You would look at the, and again, so I'm trying not to use religion within my argument here. Let's go back to science, right? And let's get into physics, let's say. When a physicist looks at, you know, his whatever problem he's trying to solve, and if he has to, if the principles of physics says that he has to use this particular material for this particular object he's trying to get to fly, and he has to use this particular type of fuel, and then he cheaps out and he uses something else, and that gets the pilot killed, for example, we wouldn't look at the notion of physics and say, well, physics failed the pilot here. We would look at the particular physicist who made that error, or perhaps did so intentionally. That ultimately got that person killed. And this is the crux of my argument, which feel free to wipe the floor with me. If the users of whatever the discipline are using the discipline in a way that caused harm or was against the teachings of that discipline, Maybe it requires a purge, it requires reform, maybe they have to expel bad actors, what have you. But ultimately, it appears to me irrational to abandon the discipline entirely. The principles of whatever the discipline is, they should be scrutinized, they should be found either wanting or found to be held up to be true. And then from there, we can discuss the validity of that particular discipline. And again, this goes back to Christianity, but again, that's the particular aspects of Christianity are outside of the scope of this conversation. There are better people than me to have that conversation with. I believe that the biggest fault was the misinterpretation, and you've argued that, you know, that God would have known that people would misinterpret things because he's outside of matter, space, and time, and he can observe these sorts of things. And perhaps I'm just putting on my speculation hat for a moment here. It's perhaps God saw that and said, well, this is going to be the best outcome, because if I put my finger on the dial anymore, other bad things would happen, and ultimately I don't want to do that to my creation. I don't want them to act out of fear. I want them to act out of love. Again, not trying to put words in God's mouth. This is just a thought I'm having. I wouldn't want to commit sacrilege or heresy and get a bad name for that, or give God a bad name either.
I want to make sure that you finish your thought.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it's a very interesting argument, and I certainly appreciate it. We don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have bad scientists. We don't throw out science as a whole. We have bad accountants. We don't throw out accountancy. And so I get all of that. There are bad doctors. That doesn't mean that we abandon health or medicine. I get all of that. However, Christianity is a way of trying to teach people to be good. Now, if there was an engineering university that produced people consistently bad at engineering, we wouldn't get rid of the engineering principles. We would get rid of that school. And we would say, this school is bad. So if the goal of Christianity is to have people be brave, do good, be honest, and protect the children and the helpless and so on, then saying Christianity is failing is not saying, well, then we shouldn't try to be good and be honest and so on, right? We would say, this way of getting people to be good is not working. So if a particular engineering school has had a monopoly on education and it has consistently produced engineers where all the bridges fall down and all the buildings fall down and the sewage explodes and all of that, then we would say not that we don't want good bridges or buildings or sewage that works. We would say this way of getting people to be good engineers doesn't work. So yep. I agree with you, but you can't say the school is perfect. Everyone's just failing the school. The school teaches well, even though all the engineers, their bridges fall down, their buildings fall down, and the sewage explodes, and the electricity short circuits and takes out legions of children in the schools. And right, we can't say, no, the engineering principles that are being taught and the way it's being taught, it's perfect. It's just everyone's failing to maintain the wonderful standards and so on, right? We would say that school is not working. Like, and if there's another school where engineers are coming out that are better and more consistent and so on, we'd say, okay, well, the problem isn't the principles of engineering, and a bad engineering school blaming, they're saying, well, you don't want to throw out bad engineering. You don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You don't want to throw out all engineering principles just because you're calling us bad at training engineers. It's like, that's kind of a dodge. No, the fact is that I think that part of the purpose of Christianity is to teach people to be good, because you can't be close to God and you can't get to heaven without being good. The purpose of Christianity is not to just have people have faith. The purpose of Christianity is for people to actually do good works in the world. And my experience and the experience of what you're going through in Australia and other places is that it's not working. The children are not being particularly protected. In fact, they're still being quite harmed. That the Christian subservience to the government, and of course, you can look at if people have an issue with, say, migrancy into America, it is the churches that are taking hundreds of billions of dollars from the government to resettle migrants in the West. You know, how that works out? Well, I've argued it's not going to work out particularly well, to put it mildly. But the churches are deeply, deeply essential, involved in, and easily paid for that process. So that's the other thing. The other thing, too, of course, is that if an engineer uses shoddy materials and the bridge falls down and people fall to their death, what happens? They get sued. They get criminal negligence. They go to jail. Where is that correction mechanism in religion? Do you just cross your fingers and hope for a better pope or a better priest or something like that? I mean, where is the corrective mechanism in religion, or in Christianity in particular? Where's the corrective mechanism? Because if you do bad things in the free market, if you don't fulfill your obligations, if you use bad materials, if you're negligent, if you're lazy, if you don't double check your work, then you get your butt sued off and you probably will go to jail if it's criminal negligence and you cause people's deaths. Is the church liable if they bring a bunch of people into the country and those people commit crimes? I don't think so. We can talk about the free market and science, but they generally have corrective medicines, more so corrective mechanisms. I don't see any of that in particular in religion.
Yeah. As far as religion the corrective mechanism there might be a few corrective mechanisms here and there on earth with social ostracism and the like, but ultimately that comes on judgment day, where we are judged for our what we do, and we receive our rewards or our punishment. And that's probably not a big comfort for you in this life, Stefan, because you're trying to fix the world as much as you can here on earth.
Sorry to interrupt. Is it a comfort for you seeing what's happening to Australia?
I would say it's to a certain extent. I would say that the notion that evil politicians and political groups, special interest groups and the like, the notion that they're going to get their comeuppance does give me some particular perhaps a schadenfreude, perhaps you could say. But again, yes, you're right. It's not fixed in the country. And again, the eternal life for me is far more important than just having a good life here. I'd like to have a good life here, and I don't think I can, which is actually why I'm actually somewhat interested in seeing what certain parts of the United States look like. But that's a different conversation. So when we are talking about the going back to the engineering school, when they're talking about the when you were saying, you know, they're teaching the wrong thing, they're going off and teaching people incorrect principles and the like, they're violating the rules of engineering. The right thing to do is to get rid of the institution that's teaching the wrong points of engineering. And I think Christianity gets a particularly bad rap for its bad actors. And long story short, I think there just aren't enough good Christian institutions to make as much of a positive change as we would like. I think theoretically it's possible, but I think it's a constant uphill battle to make positive changes, at least until something gets really bad and the entire system breaks, which I wouldn't want to be here for that if that happened. I think that would just be horrific to have to go through. So I'd say, what is the mechanism that we can do? A cop out to pray, to try and figure out what God wants us to do. And again, I understand you don't believe that God exists, but if we were to look at the principles of Christianity and say this is how the church should be set up, this is the principles that they do follow, we should attempt to emulate that to the best of our abilities. And those who are making mistakes or intentionally using it or intentionally misunderstanding it, perhaps is a better word to use, or even unintentionally misunderstanding, for what that's worth. I think it's far better that we do what we can to try and fix it, or at least remove ourselves from those institutions that are doing harmful things that go against the teachings of Christianity.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and that all sounds very nice. I look at the sort of raw numbers. I'm a bit of a numbers guy, comes out of my entrepreneurial days. I'm a bit of a numbers guy. So a little over 100 years ago, white people were a third of the planet. And now 2% of the world's population is white women of childbearing age. I mean, when do we start to look at different ways of doing things? When we're down to 1%, 0.5%? I mean, if I were to look at a business, right? Let's just say I would look at a business and I would say, okay, the business went from a third market share down to, 2% productive salespeople, so to speak, and of the 2% of the world's population that are white women of childbearing age, half of them aren't having kids. So we're really down to 1% from a third, right? So if I were in the business world, and this was a problem that I was tasked with fixing, I would say, well, who's been in charge of this business, so to speak? Who's been running this business? And the answer is Christianity. And so then I would say, okay, well, we're going to need to look for other things, because there is a certain amount of passivity. There is a certain amount of God's going to handle it, and God's going to punish the people, and God's going to make it right, and I'm going to be fine after death, and so on. And that is, I mean, it's not exactly Viking mentality.
A cop-out.
Put it mildly. Sorry, go ahead.
It's a bit of a cop-out. Would be accurate to say.
Well, I mean, what's your answer? Do you think that the West is just going to vanish? I mean, what do you think, based upon the trends, what's going to happen?
I think that there will be declines, but there are in some countries, right? You know, you've got Trump in the United States, where he's effectively reprogrammed the Republican Party. And he's not perfect by any means, but he's done, I think, a lot of good in the country. He's kept he's expelled a lot of illegal immigrants. He's appointed a number of good judges. And there's still a lot of bad actors within there, but they're not necessarily most of them, I don't think, are in his party. You've got Rupert Lowe's Restore Britain, where he's promising to change the a lot of the systems over there. So you're looking at a lot of policy changes there.
Sorry to interrupt. I mean, I'm sure you've been tracking this as well. Germany has tried to send a couple of 100,000 Syrians back to Syria, and what happened?
I hadn't heard of that.
So Germany is trying to say, look, the war's over, your country's largely at peace, and you got to go back. And the Syrian government has said, nope, we're not taking them. And the answer for that is pretty clear and pretty obvious, which is that the Syrians in Germany get hundreds of billions of euros collectively in welfare. And, you know, some have work, but most of them are on welfare. And they take that money and they send it to Syria, right, to their families and all of that. And so the Syrian government gets hundreds of billions of dollars, or whatever amount it is a lot, and it doesn't have to provide any services to its citizens, right? No roads, no old age pensions, no health care, no education for the kids, no nothing, right? And so, of course, the Syrian government isn't going to take them back. I mean, if somebody was giving you $1 million a month and you didn't have to lift a finger, or you didn't get $1 million a month and you had to go to work, most people would take the $1 million a month for nothing. And so the government's... I mean, don't want them back. And this, again, was very, very predictable. I mean, you could tax remittances going overseas at 100%, particularly if they came from welfare and so on. But governments don't want to do that, I assume, because there'll be riots and the women will all get upset at the level of violence that might be needed to quell the riots and so on. So, I mean, I'm not saying there's no political solution. I'm not a politician, so who knows what's going on. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be a particularly gentle process, if that makes sense. So, maybe there are things. But to go back, kids, we're not, you know, I understand there's a difference between church and state, obviously, right? But the issue is, for me, that... For 60 years, I have seen Christians not do the right thing, even though it's pretty clear. I have seen Christians back down. I have seen churches wokeified and corrupted. I have seen the Pope turn into, I don't even know what to call this creature in the funny hat. And I don't see it... being solved anytime soon. I don't see any big turnaround. I do have a friend who says, you know, we Christians tend to be at our best when we're being persecuted and when we're sort of up against the end of things. And it's like, can we not though? Can we not do that?
Yeah.
It would be nice. It would be nice not to wait for a total emergency. Like, can we not change our diet and exercise before we have a near fatal heart attack or something like that?
Oh yeah, but you know, sugar's just so good, Steph. You don't understand. I think ultimately things are going to may have, so with the way politics works, I think that there are certain countries, perhaps Germany is one of them, perhaps Australia is one of them, where things are not able to be fixed, in which case sometimes it's best to maybe perhaps abandon ship, go to a different place where there are different institutions. Maybe create your own institutions, your own free society. Maybe there's a possibility for a free society to come up somewhere. I think it's highly unlikely. I think the notion that we would create a truly free society where there is no government within at least our lifetime is very, very, very unlikely, at least on any particularly large scale, because of how many bad actors exist within humanity. Right.
I'm sorry, because I don't want to get overly drawn into the political side, even though I, to some degree,
feel
that.
Of course.
But what I would say is that the goal of my philosophical approach and peaceful parenting and so on is to reason with children early on, to not use force or coercion, to raise them and so on. And something like, you know, I mean, one of the big problems in America in particular, and this is true throughout the West, I know a little bit more about the history of it in America, you know, government education was pursued heavily by Christians because the Protestants wanted to keep the Catholics from taking over intellectually. And there was not any particular revolt by the Christians when central banking came along. Now, central banking is, of course, I mean, the one time we see Jesus actively violent is with the money changers and the financial meddlers and so on, right? So central banking...
They were intentionally corrupt for what that's worth. But yes.
As are central bankers. So,
yes.
So Christians, even with the example of Jesus, were unable to have a revolt against central banking. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, and so on. It violates, I think, 11 of the Ten Commandments as a whole, thou shalt not, so on, right? And that is where a lot of the root of the problems come from. Government having control of children's minds will lead them towards secularism and is like one giant a lever to move the mindset of the whole society, and this is terrible. And central banking or counterfeiting, typing whatever you want into your own bank account, just completely distorts the economy and so on, and was really what drove the length of World War I and the destruction of World War II and so on. And the natural enemy of Christianity is communism, secularism to some degree, communism in particular, and, you know, communists are just taken over all over the place, slow march through the institutions. So what I have to say is this. Christians pray, and I believe that Christians pray wholeheartedly for wisdom, truth, virtue, and goodness. And I assume that when these terrible things were going on in society, that Christians pray to God for courage, wisdom, and strength. And yet, these things have continued and expanded. So what that means is that either there is no God and Christians are just getting the answers back that they want, which tends to be easiest in their life to not make any particular sacrifices to end this corruption, or God is telling them, listen, you really need to make sure you don't support central banking and you really need to make sure that you don't support government indoctrination of the children. And then again, I know a lot of Christians are homeschooling and so on, which is I think relatively good. But either God is not giving them any answers, or God is giving them answers that they're not in particular listening to, or God is giving them the wrong answers and they're listening to, and none of which support Christianity. Like if the most charitable explanation is that God is giving Christians the right answers, but Christians aren't listening and acting on them, in which case, well, if in a sense, we then either have to give up completely, because if there is a God, he's all-knowing, he's all-powerful, and Christians and other religious people believe in God, and God is telling you through prayer, is telling you the right things to do, then if humanity can't do the right thing when almighty, all-knowing, all-powerful God whispers in their ear or yells in their ear or gives them thoughts or visions or impulses on what to do, which is the purpose of prayer, with the promise of heaven and the punishment of hell, then there's no chance for virtue. There's zero chance for virtue. Like if somebody's a bad spender or they're bad at managing their money and then you give them a whole bunch of money, you give them $100 million and they blow it all in a year, then there's no chance for them to be good with money because you can't give them more money. And so if God is giving Christians the right commandments and God is answering Christians' prayers with wisdom and focus and so on, and, you know, the Christians who are around me, to sort of take it back to where we started, the Christians who are around me were hearing me and others in my household getting beaten and screamed at and thrown against walls and so on, and plates shattering and knives flying around and so on. So they were praying to God for wisdom. Right? They were praying, what should I do? Even though it's obvious in the Bible what they should do, right? And it's not exactly being crucified, making a 20-second phone call to the authorities that's anonymous, right? So they were praying to God every night for what to do. And I know this because my aunts, again, would make me pray. And I was happy to pray when I was younger and I went to boarding school where I went to church a couple of times a week and prayed every night and so on. And so I know that the Christians around me were praying for wisdom. So then the question is, why did they not do something simple and easy in conformity with religion? And I don't know the answer to that. And of course, I can't read people's minds. And if it was just one or two people, but it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in probably 1,000 or more in a variety of different environments and circumstances, because we always lived in these apartments with these paper thin walls and, you know, everyone could hear. And people were Christians and they were praying for answers about what to do. And either God told them, well, listen, this kid's getting like assaulted. This is brutal. And you got to pick up the phone and get him help or whatever, right? Go knock on the door. But, you know, even if you're afraid of doing that, at least, you know. So either God told them to, and they didn't do it, which is kind of incomprehensible, or God told them, you know what, just let him be beaten, because if he gets beaten badly enough in 30 years, he'll come up with peaceful parenting and UPB, right? So maybe, I can't imagine that's the plan, is let the child suffer so that maybe some good scar tissue can produce some good philosophy. Or God said, oh yeah, no, he should be beaten, even though I was Christian back then, and so on. So that's at a sort of very personal level, and the abstract philosophical and political stuff is interesting, but I'll just tell you a sort of visceral personal level, I can't understand why people were praying to God for help, a God they believed in, a God they viewed as all-knowing, all-perfect, all-good, and who promised them heaven or threatened them with hell for eternity, and they couldn't make a 20-second phone call. I got to tell you, that's just, I can't process that, like, intellectually.
Yeah. My counter argument, more or less, is that it addresses a shortcoming in Christianity in that, or at least of Christians in that regard, because the underlying values and principles are there to direct people, and so I think that. Because again, Christians are not Christianity. Christianity is the set of ideas and principles that are based around the life of Jesus, his death and resurrection.
And giving you instructions when you pray.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your answer as to why 1,000+ Christians didn't make a simple phone call, and they were happy to make a phone call when I was having a party? And I mean this with like genuine openness and curiosity. There could have been something that's never crossed my mind. You know, there's some scar tissue around the experiences. Surrounded by Christians, they're perfectly aware of the violence and abuse. They're praying to God for guidance. I assume that you believe that God told them to do the right thing, right?
Yeah. In regards whether they heard God's word or whether they listened, I can't speak for that. I wasn't them, not one of them. There is no particularly good answer, Steph. These Christians, in the very least, failed you. I'm not gonna.
Right, they failed God.
Yeah, yeah. So
if God told them to do the right thing, and doing the right thing was very easy, and doing the right thing actually would have been better for them, because I'm sure they didn't enjoy, you know, the crashes, cries, screams, and thumps against the wall and so on. That kind of been much fun for the people around me and so on, right? So, I mean, it just made no sense at all. Even from a practical standpoint, you'd want to deal with it and so on. But the sounds of beatings were fine. The sounds of merriment, well, that means call the cops. So if they have a pipeline to God and God is telling them to do the right thing, and every single one of them is doing the wrong thing, then it doesn't work. And I wish it did. Obviously, my life would be a whole lot easier if Christianity or religion worked. My life would be a whole lot easier because I would be a priest, not a controversial, canceled, attacked, and threatened philosopher, right? My life would be a whole lot easier. And I would be super happy if it did work. It really would. But it hasn't yet, right? And it's been now over 2,000 years, I'm pushing 60, and I see no evidence of it working. In fact, I see it getting worse. Christianity is shrinking and dying off, and the West is you could say existential trouble and so on, and the Pope is doing his thing, and the priests are doing their thing and importing people by the millions, and I just, you know, I mean, I have ideals, of course, I have ideals, but I also have practicalities. Now, the reason that I think it doesn't work is that people don't really believe it. Because if people did believe it, like if somebody said to me, Steph, you make one anonymous phone call to protect a child who's being abused, and I'll give you $10 million. I mean, I think I'd do it either way because I have intervened in situations of child abuse. But if somebody also said, and you'll get $10 million tax-free, I would do that. I mean, I would do it without yep. $10 million. But most people, you know, if somebody had knocked on the doors of my neighbors or even my aunts and said, we'll give you $10 million and maybe you don't want it yourself, you can give it to charity or the church. Oh, you just have to make this anonymous phone call for 20 seconds and get the authorities involved in this child's assaults and protect him. People would do that, right? So heaven is worth infinitely more than $10 million, right? And the treasure, as Jesus says, it's the treasure you lay up in heaven that matters. It's the gold in heaven that matters, not the gold on this earth. So people don't believe it because if they did believe it, they'd make the call. Because it's clear that that's what they should do. And so they don't believe it. And maybe human beings are too empirical or pragmatic or sense-based or flesh-based or something like that. But the only answer is that people don't believe it. And if people are taught morality that they don't really believe, if people are taught consequences they don't really believe, then religion then becomes a barrier to virtue. In the same way that if you think that there's a magic pill that's going to remove all the smoking damage from your lungs, it's going to be pretty hard for you to quit smoking. And so if people say, well, you know, I've prayed, I've gone to church, and I believe and I have faith and so on, and that's good, that's what I need to do to get into heaven, but they don't actually do good in the world or they don't actually do what the Bible commands and so on, then it's like some weird mirror that makes you look thin when you're not or something like that, and your clothes fit perfectly and there's every indication that you're slender when you're not. You have maybe some body dysmorphia. You think you're slender when you're not. Then you're not going to lose weight because you think you have a solution that you don't. And if I sort of look around the world as a whole and I see, you know, evildoers winning and good people kind of going into the fetal position or armadillo style or running from place to place, trying to get to some place of safety and security for another 5 minutes. And I see Christianity falling and fading and participating in some of the ruin of things that are going on. I'm like, okay, well, I can't ride this thing into the ground. It's too risky. And that's why I've really tried to focus on another solution because I don't think, and I'm not talking about you in particular, I'm just talking about the people. I can't understand if it's a simple, easy thing to do, like make a phone call and you get to go to heaven because of that and people don't do it, then they don't believe. And you can say, oh, well, that's a failure. People don't believe. And it's like, yeah, but if people don't believe and it's kind of disastrous that people don't believe, then we need something people can believe in, which is why I worked on UPB because UPB can prove virtue and property rights and rape, theft, assault, and murder, evil, and so on. And I don't need any faith. I don't need any belief. I don't need any, I won't say sky daddies because that's like a real cringe Redditor fedora phrase, but
I appreciate that.
Yeah. I think it's very disrespectful to the enormous intellectual and moral and artistic contributions of Christianity. But if people don't really believe in the virtues that they inherited, then we need to give them virtues they can believe in and that they don't need to try and square a circle in their mind to sustain. And that really has been the purpose of the rational or philosophical approach to ethics. But listen, I mean, I've had a long chat. We've had a long chat. I'll certainly give you the last word because I don't want to ride roughshod over your perspective. Again, I really do appreciate the conversation.
Yes. In regards to whether or not those Christians truly Christians believed what the tenets of Christianity said or not, ultimately doesn't have any impact on the validity of the teachings themselves or the history of Christianity or whether or not Jesus lived and died and rose again. These are either true or they are false, regardless of whether Christians have screwed you over or not. Gandhi made a very interesting point, and he did sleep in the same bed as his grandnieces to test his willpower against sexual desire. So there's not a lot of respect for me in that regard. But the one quote that does make a good point was, "I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ." Because again, lots of Christians just did not follow Jesus' teachings. They did not follow what he said. Whether they believed incorrectly or they intentionally misunderstood has no relevance on whether Christ's teachings are true or not. These are separate discussions, again, had by far better people than myself. Whether Christianity is functioning in its intended way doesn't change whether or not the underlying principles are true. It ultimately just shows that people have made mistakes, they screw ups, or perhaps even that philosophically speaking, maybe God made a mistake. I'm not claiming that, but you did make that claim for what it's worth. I'm being intellectually honest here. So, thank you for the discussion. And I don't imagine this is what's going to be the call that brings you back to Jesus. I can imagine a lot of people will look at this conversation and say, you know, oh, Stefan absolutely mugged this guy.
No, that's not the purpose of the conversation. It really is to have an illuminating and enlightening discussion about cause and effect and right and wrong and good and evil. And so I'm not trying to win. I'm obviously just trying to get my perspective across. And your perspective is powerful and I really appreciate it. And you've certainly given me some stuff to think about.
Yeah. In which case, Steph, I'll continue to pray for you. And I hope that this isn't the end of this conversation. I hope that you can have better conversations with more people. Again, Vox Day is a good person to talk to as far as the theory of evolution is concerned. He's written a few things on his on Vox Populi over there that you could have a look at. But again, all the best to you, Steph, in your future endeavors and travels and journeys. And if I'm ever in the area, which is, you know, possible, unlikely but possible, I'd love to say good day sometime. So
I appreciate that, and thank you for a great conversation. I'm sure we'll talk again. Take care. Have a good night.
Thank you, Steph. Bye.